welcome to another session of On the Couch. My name is Henry Jennings from Marcus Today, and this On the Couch podcast series is an occasional series of chats with fund managers, CEOs, brokers, and analysts, aiming to give you, the listener, an insight into the investing world. So I hope you enjoy this episode. And today I'm really lucky to be joined by Jonathan Higgins from Unified Capital Partners. And of course, Jonathan is no stranger to Marcus Today members and listeners to this podcast. I think, Jonathan, you still hold the record for the number of downloads, the highest number of downloads of any of our podcasts. So we need to break that one today, and we need to get you to beat yourself, I guess. Of course, Jonathan is an analyst previously with Shore & Partners, where I first met Jonathan, and Bell Potter Securities. And now Jonathan, of course, is with Unified Capital Partners down in Melbourne. So welcome, Jonathan. Really delighted to have you on board.
Thanks, Henry, and appreciate the exposure and the like from Marcus and the team.
It's an absolute pleasure. Now, just remember, if you are listening to this, this is general advice only. So please do your own research, contact your own financial advisor regarding any of the thoughts and ideas in this podcast. All right, Jonathan, let's kick things off with the question that I'm sure everyone's asking at the moment is, how was it for you?
Yeah, look, for us as a firm, it was a and personally, it was a great reporting season. Probably the best I think we've had since sort of the 2020 times as we were exiting that period, and we had the likes of stimulus and JobKeeper and the like. So, what really came to the fore with us in our reporting season was that some of the structural growth companies that we do, whether they be in telco land, alternative financials, the fintech, even some of the platforms and the like, look, they all perform really well. And that, you know, we have a bias as a firm at Unified Capital Partners towards smaller companies. So those companies sort of sub $2-3 billion in market cap have sort of been left behind in the rally a little bit. And we started to see some of that outperformance coming through with the re-rating of some of those companies that we cover, and also some of the companies in the universe. So look, fingers crossed that it continues, but broadly the bigger businesses that we like, the Zips, the Aussie Broadbands, the Premier Investments, the Hub24s and the like, they all went really well for the firm. So we were pretty pleased with it. The only thing is obviously coming off a good reporting season, we're sort of a little bit wary of how things, you know, sort of continue to play out. But yeah, look, it was good. And I think most, you know, small companies had a good performance through the period. And I think you'll see some good numbers out of some of the fund managers as well out through this period.
It was interesting, isn't it? I always find there's a word that tends to dominate a reporting season. And for many seasons of the past, the word challenging has been one of those words that dominated. But I think personally, from looking at a lot of company reports and going through some, the word this time was control, cost control, and also control about how much you could increase your prices, I guess, how much control you had over your own pricing ability, that moat, that unique selling point. I think we saw it very much in the building material stocks, things like James Hardie, Boral and CSR, all the ability to raise their prices and get them to stick, even though with a bit of squealing from customers perhaps. So control for me, that was the theme. What about highlights for you? Were there any stocks that stood out and you thought, wow, that was an absolute ripper of a result, and we should be getting on board this one?
Look, I mean, across our company subset, probably the one that stands out the best is Aussie Broadband. And the listeners would have recalled, I think, that we spoke about this earlier in the year or sort of a few months ago. This was one of our key picks for calendar year 24. Which reported a first half was pretty much in line with where we sort of thought they'd be on the earnings front. But more importantly, they came out and upgraded guidance. They provided an outlook where growth was accelerating into the second half. And since that date, they've also launched the potential takeover, or they're looking to bid for the asset of Superloop, which is another ASX listed company. So look, that was our sort of probably our up in lights company in terms of the coverage that we had here in Unified. But I think more broadly than that, I mean, what we did see, like what you're saying, in reporting season was that those companies that could, you know, sort of control their demand profile either via price or cost cutting and the like were what was rewarded. So we saw the likes of pretty much every online retailer in the country delivering some really strong results, the likes of your Temple & Webster's, your Kogan's and the like. And we also saw on the cost side of things, you know, we saw turnarounds that now look really interesting. Like we saw Bravura obviously ahead on their cost cutting and delivering well there. Iress looked like they were ahead on theirs. So Look, I agree with you very much so. Like, I think that, the thing that came through from us on the reporting season side of things was that some of the cyclicals that you mentioned, the building materials, the banks, some of those types of businesses were essentially talking towards peak margin and peak pricing. I think, they are sort of all sitting at all-time highs. They're sitting at all-time highs on multiples, I think, as well, effectively. Some of the commentary we saw out of them was that there was potential air pockets coming in the economy in the next 6 to 12 months, and that's the first time we saw that. But flipping it on its head, the reality is that for us here at Unified, we focus on the structural growth end of the market, and those companies that have continued to grow, there's a premium on them starting to come through. So that was the dynamic that was playing out for us in February.
Yeah, I've got to say, Jonathan, congratulations on your call on ABB. It did nothing for a little while. I have to say, it kind of flatlined, and I guess the Symbio takeover and the capital raise there probably weighed on it a little bit with that indigestion. But those Symbio results were pretty good, I thought, and then ABB and backed it up with their own good results and increased guidance, as you say. And now on to Superloop, which may be in the bag. So we'll see, I guess. But it remains pretty well bid, I guess.
Look, I think for the listeners with in regards to it, I mean, you're always looking for, sort of a smaller mid-cap story that can compound both some organic growth and potentially some acquisitive growth, particularly in the telco side of things. There's probably listeners that would have watched the likes of iiNet and M2 and some of these types of businesses previously. The reality with telcos is that it's an all recurring income game. And that there is every circa sort of 10, sort of 10 years, every decade, there's a wave of entrepreneurs that come in with either a new technology or a new way of selling and the like. And for the listeners, Aussie Broadband is definitely like, it is one of those businesses. So they've organically become the fifth largest telco in Australia by customers. And that's been done pretty much all organically before they've undertaken the acquisition of Over the Wire and Symbio. And if they get Superloop, that will then put them as more customers than Optus. So you've got a business that's organically growing 20% plus per annum. They're going to be delivering better earnings over time as sort of their infrastructure rolls out. The management and board of the business are the largest single shareholders. They're well regarded in terms of the telco industries. And the thing that's really interesting with Superloop, like what you're saying, is that this is the first RSP type acquisition or retail service provider acquisition we've seen in the market. So it's likely to be highly, highly sort of earnings accretive over time. And strategically, like I said, it takes them from five and six to number three. And so they'll then have leading voice businesses, leading NBN reseller businesses, and a strongly growing infrastructure pipeline. And I think one thing that's very hard to find on the ASX at the moment is an improving earnings profile. There's definitely earnings growth to be had depending on where you're looking. There's definitely cost cutting. Some of the blue chips are keeping their earnings higher for longer. You spoke about some of them earlier. But there's very few companies, I think, that'll see a re-rating plus the earnings curve coming through. So if Aussie Broadband isn't on your watch list, it's one to definitely put down.
Oh, and we did see, I've got to say, we did see some serious volatility in some of these stocks on reports, sometimes to be reversed the following day. Did this surprise you, or is this now just a factor of life in terms of reporting season? There's going to be a landmine blows up, you're going to get this volatility, maybe some reversals, maybe it kicks further down. But is this just something we need to get used to?
Look, I think so. Very much the market's windows of where they're looking at the opportunity in a business, I think, have shortened than where they were previously. I think that's been a dynamic that's played out in COVID. I think also just in general, the business cycles, these 5 to 7 year sort of business cycles, I think also have probably shortened up quite a bit. And you can see that through the interest rate cycle at the moment. There's obviously expectations of interest rates, I think, having peaked in Australia and looking like they've definitively peaked in the US with cuts at some point this year. Although it's been a fast pace of interest rate increases, the reality is that we're only circa sort of 18 months into that process. And so that'd be one of the shorter cycles, irrespective of the violence. So, look, I think investors, unfortunately, there's opportunity in such events with volatility. The reality is, I think if you find good companies, earnings growth always looks after share price appreciation over time. But like what you said, I think it's very much a shoot first, ask questions later type environment. Capital flows seem to be increasing. And one of the dynamics that's been the case over the last 12 months is market volumes have been down. So, we're seeing market volumes down. That sort of, adds to that volatility that you're talking about. Market volatility is, probably something that's here to stay, in my view.
Yeah, it certainly does look like it. Now, looking at the reporting season, I guess, were there any lowlights of the reporting season? There's one that stands out for me, and it's not really a company that reported, but certainly one in the sort of small tech space. But what about you? Any lowlights that were out there, not necessarily in stocks you cover, but just things that maybe caught your eye?
Look, I wouldn't say lowlights is the right word for me. Look, what I think I was most interested about at a macro level was some of the commentary that you raised in regards to the larger businesses in Australia. You know, I think if you look at the worst performing sectors through February, it was the material sector, it was the energy sector. I mean, it was pretty much industries that are related to global growth. So, you know, effectively, you know, we've had sort of energy prices haven't been rallying. Meanwhile, we've got wars going on in two parts of the globe. We're in the Northern Hemisphere winter. So, you know, there's indications like that. It's telling you global growth is really struggling. And then you sort of peruse the data and you talk towards some of the company results. You know, CBA was flagging that their net interest margins are on a downward path. Macquarie said the same, said there's competition still remaining in the home loan sector. You know, like James Hardie pushed through a double-digit price increase, like what you flagged. You know, the data's all telling you at a cyclical level, at a high level economy level, things are slowing. We've seen some data out this week in regards to building approvals. The currency's under pressure. So the one thing that probably stood out for me was just like cautious outlook statement from some of the larger businesses that drive Australia's economy. There's evidently, I think, slowing global growth. That's the nature of when you raise interest rates, like what they are. And you've also got the specter of China. Like, you know, it seems that sentiment swings on China based on whatever the local party meetings given for the last Monday. But the reality is, I think that you've seen iron ore at very high levels compared to you know, where the cost curve may be. And, you know, when you're seeing global growth, things like energy, things like iron ore and stuff do remain under pressure. And you know, the material space doesn't have the battery metals cycle sort of in an upswing at the moment. It's in a downswing. So, look, the thing that stands out for me is to probably be cautious on the broader economy. It doesn't mean that there's a huge issue. There's not a wall that we're going to run into, but it's definitively a slowing environment. And that's why we're sort of, you know, we do think that what you should be looking at as a result is you need to find companies that are going to grow. You know, I think the ASX 200 is forecast to grow something like 2% this year. It's pretty slow sort of earnings growth at a valuation multiple that's probably closer to 20 times PE in industrials. You know, there's probably some better options, I'd say, internationally and also in the smaller companies is the way that I'm feeling about things.
Does that mean we should probably avoid local retailers, the likes of JB Hi-Fi, maybe Premier, those sorts of stocks? Or, you know, we kind of got pleasantly surprised, I guess, because everyone was assuming the death of retailer, but when the retail numbers came out, they were actually, even Gerry Harvey, they weren't that bad at all. In fact, some of them were fantastic. Satire and Temple and Webster, Kogan, especially the online space, very, very bullish retail results.
Yeah, look, I think retail is one of those sectors where the market sentiment swings from doom and gloom to, you know, very much optimism every sort of, it feels like 3 to 6 months. I recall, you know, last year, a number of large brokers talking towards like for likes going to be down 10% and the like for retailers when they'd never been down more than 6% in 1 month ever, even whilst you have inflation. So, look, I think the thing with retailers to always be aware of is like the good retailers have structural growth trajectories and they have businesses that are either growing their store rollout or they're growing, you know, they're just their geographic spread. So, you know, the ones to focus on that would be Lovisa. They've got a great rollout happening, some great comps coming through. There's a bit of a Swiftie effect as well to come through this half for the Taylor Swift fans out there. As well as you've got the likes of Premier you spoke about. Premier's two biggest brands are Peter Alexander. And the Smiggle brand, both of those brands are category killing businesses that are expanding offshore. So although the business is re-rating, there's a long runway to growth in terms of store rollout and the like, and you've got the strategic review there. You probably should remain a little bit cautious on some of the stocks that are more related to the housing cycle. So I think the likes of JB Hi-Fi and the like have run very strongly on the back of the market being underweight these results, but they're sort of near valuation highs. So I think, you know, broadly, you should be cautious around some of the retailers in line with some of our results, but you know, like they're still businesses that have huge return on invested capitals when it's working. Most of them have pretty good balance sheets, so they're here to weather. You just want to, I think, be very careful around which ones you pick, would be my broader sentiment on it.
Looking ahead, and this is a stock that you and I talked about when we last chatted back in December, and it was my Ausbiz Advent Calendar pick for 2024, which was Zip. And it's fair to say it has gone pretty well And you've nailed it there. You've obviously you've gone into it in a lot more detail than me. For me, it was a trade on the back of US Cyber Monday and Black Friday sales, etc. But can you run through Zip where it is at the moment and if it has more upside, I guess?
Yeah, look, Zip's obviously something we've followed through severe upcycle and sort of a severe downcycle. So I appreciate the listener's patience in this one, and obviously it's gone well since we spoke about it last. Look, I mean, there's a couple of key things to note with the buy now, pay later sector and some of these structural businesses. I think the first is to note that the increase in the cost of capital has meant that the larger sector participants, of which Zip is one, but the likes of Affirm, your Klarnas, your Afterpay, Squares, they've all had to be incredibly rational, and they've had to become rational as a result of where the sector is. And they've had to focus on the things that are going to make them money over time. And I think that continues in the near term. The second is that Zip is not a small business. Zip's a business with, you know, $1 billion in annual revenue. They do $10 billion of TTV. They've got a $300 million corporate cost base roughly. And they've got millions of customers around the world. And so they really had to become rational and did become rational and now are focusing on two markets. And so really what we've seen out of Zip in the last 3 to 6 months is just the beginning of that starting to be rated in investors' minds. The reality for Zip is that they're a business that reported cash EBITDA of $31 million, which was a $60 million turnaround year on year in the first half. And quite frankly, that's the largest turnaround nominally I've seen. So, you know, there's a lot of leverage in their business. And I suppose that brings us to the next question, which is they've re-rated a lot here. But if you can find belief, I think, which we have in their medium-term targets, they drive their business off a percentage of TTV, they're talking towards making 1 to 2% cash EBITDA margins over time on their total transaction value. And they're at 0.6% in the first half, you know, having come from a very negative area. So I think there's line of sight on Zip hitting those medium term targets in, you know, the next year or so, or the next, you know, year and a half. Effectively on a large TTV base, then you could see some significant cash EBITDA numbers. And although the company's re-rated to, I think, a $1.1 billion market cap, at that point, you've got a business that's probably growing 50 or 60% per annum, generating significant cash flow and the like. So what I say to the listeners is I expect Zip's share price to start, I think, settle down over the next month or two because there's no immediate sort of sector information. We've had all the peers report, and then we'll get their quarterly in April, which we'll be able to see some of the momentum and the initiatives on pricing and just the various customer loan book and the US momentum, which I think sort of increased through the half. So look, I still think there's plenty upside to Zip. I think you'll see your next data point in April. If you do get interest rate cuts in the market, which I don't think are in the next couple of months, but if we do get interest rate cuts, every 25 basis points is worth roughly $7 million of cash EBITDA to the business, all things held constant. So there is some significant leverage to the upside. And the other thing I'd say is, and I think you pointed this out to me in an email, Klarna's talking about IPOing through this year. So I think you should see some sort of positive sentiment remain in the sector. Both Affirm and Square, which owns Afterpay, materially beat expectations in the last quarter, and I expect them to do the same as well. You can get access to Square on the Australian market via their dual listing there. But both of those businesses are seeing strong momentum coming through in terms of the earnings, strong momentum on the TTV. And the retail environment, we spoke about it previously, the prior retail environment saw merchants is not really requiring the need to drive volume. And the current retail environment is just like every other retail environment outside the last 2 or 3 years, which is these merchants need to drive volume and credit's a big part of that. So I expect there's plenty of upside here, but just sort of expect in the near term, it probably sort of, you know, we should just see it sort of hold where it's at back running into the April quarterly.
It's interesting actually, Jonathan, when I was watching CNBC as I do, it's my constant companion in the office. I watched the CEO talking about AI. I mean, everyone's talking about AI, let's face it, artificial intelligence. And he was saying that in their business, it's really making a big difference in terms of replacing human beings, answering questions about accounts, about problems, etc. Do you think AI is going to be a bit of a driver for this sector on the buy now, pay later side of things?
Oh, look, I think, I mean, AI is a buzzword, right? The reality is that I think that, you know, if you're talking about just intelligently thinking about how you're going to credit decision your customers, that's something that the buy now, pay laters have been doing for some time. And Zip has a lot of strength in what they do there. You know, effectively, they've always autonomously provided credit at the checkout, which involves looking at your bank accounts, doing a credit check and the like. So, look, they'll be at the cutting edge of such an event. I think the reality is that, you know, there's very AI in its truest form is genuinely the computer having thinking about what it's going to do and having no human interaction. I think we're a long way away from that happening in most sectors and industries. So, you know, like I think that my context on something like Zip would be they're already doing all the things that people are talking about. The banks aren't. The banks are effectively, I think, still like very heavily people dependent, offline dependent, require branches. You get sent a credit card in the mail and the like. So Zip will be at the cutting edge of that. I just think it's something that they've done for many years is probably my reflection. And I think more broadly, like a lot of companies are in a similar bucket. You know, AI is the buzzword. The reality is that, you know, the machine is still learning. You know, there still requires, I think, just some thought in how those use cases play out, because I think human intervention is still a big part of all these businesses' business models.
Yeah, I hope so anyway. Otherwise, I'm going to be out of a job. Now, looking at the market at the moment, we're pretty close to an all-time high on the ASX. Of course, we're all-time highs on many things at the moment. Bitcoin, interesting there with the halving event coming up. We're also, Japan's at an all-time high. We've got Germany. A number of economies that are in recession are actually at all-time highs. Here we are on the ASX. We're pretty close. Do you think this is all justified, or we just got a little bit carried away at the moment with equity markets?
Well, I think earnings more broadly are at all-time highs. So putting aside the cost of capital question, I think earnings are, you know, at all-time highs or close to all-time highs. There's obviously a very different profile to earnings in the US to what there is in Australia. Australia is more dominated by, you know, four banks and some iron ore businesses, and they've all held up remarkably well. I think in the US and the like, you've had the tech, you know, the tech revolution is just continuing to drive significant growth in EPS over time. So, look, I think over the long term, my view's always been that earnings drive share prices. Evidently, we've got a cost of capital now that's higher than what we've had over the COVID period, but it's probably just towards normalized levels. So, look, I think it's justified. What I would say is I think the indexes are increasingly becoming less indicative of what's actually going on in the share market. And if you look at equally weighted indexes in the US versus the NASDAQ and the like, there's been just very little breadth to the rally versus what we've seen out of the index performances. So I think it's more just a nuanced comment, which is like the indexes are mainly made up of five to six businesses now in both Australia and also in the US. And those businesses are going well, and they deserve the valuation multiples that they're getting, in my opinion. It's looking under the hood at some of the other businesses that you might own that might have been left behind, I think, where the real question remains. So, look, I think people should be cautiously optimistic. They should also be aware that the economy is in a late cycle point of view. If central banks start cutting rates, they're going to be doing that because unemployment's rising, you know, gross domestic product's under pressure. It doesn't mean we fall in a hole, but you should just be aware that both of those events end up manifesting itself through lower company profits. Lower company profits typically equal lower share prices. So just be aware of where you're playing, I think is the rule.
I think that's very good advice. Now, Jonathan, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I'm going to do a Highlander. For those of you who remember the old movie Highlander with Christopher Lambert, there can be only one. If you were investing in the market now, if you had only one stock you could pick, one stock to rule them all, let's go Lord of the Rings as well, what would that stock be for 2024? What would your pick be for this year? You've nailed it with AB&B and you've nailed it with Zip. But is there another one out there that you think, wow, this is just completely the wrong price and we should get into it?
Well, yeah, you've nailed me by not being able to put down ABB again, because that was my calendar year 24 pick. But maybe I'll provide another stock then in that context. We recently picked up a business called Southern Cross Electrical. SXE is the code on that one. They're a business which is now 80% sort of electrical services on the east coast of Australia. You know, there's obviously a significant shift towards renewables and net zero over time coming in Australia. That's been mandated. There's been a certain level by 2030, and by 2050, we're expected to be net zero. So one of the, I think, structural thematics that's going to play out on the east coast of Australia is that we need a significant amount of investment in the grid, and we need a significant amount of investment in data centers and electrical dense applications. And so there's probably two stocks that are going to benefit from that in Australia. One of them is Genus Plus. GNP is the code, which we don't cover, but special shout out to them. They specialize in doing high voltage power lines. There's a significant amount of growth to come in that business. And the other we like, which we have just initiated on, is a business called Southern Cross Electrical. So I think from memory, they're about a $220 million market cap. They got $65 million in net cash. They got cash earnings. I think they're on a cash PE of about 6 to 7 times. They're a business which is diversified away from resources towards the East Coast. Anywhere from 15% to 20% of their businesses is involved in doing data centers, they think, for NextDC and some of the other players. And they also have a big infrastructure pipeline. So they're working on the Western Sydney Airport currently. Expect to see them pick up a bunch of other work there. So if it's something that your investors haven't looked at, I think that those two stocks are going to benefit materially. It feels a lot like Service Stream in sort of 2016 before the NBN started really rolling out, to me, this electrical applications dynamic. And there's really only two ways to access it on the ASX. So we're cherry picking a couple of those. You should see some other entrants, I think, come to the market via an IPO in the not too distant future. But Southern Cross Electrical would be a new one for your listeners to have a look at. And really like the stock, like management. Think there'll be both accretion via inorganic means and a very strong growth run rate come through in the second half, which will play out in FY25.
Yeah, I guess, that we do tend to focus on the electrification of the transport sector, to some extent with electric vehicles, but we do forget about how we need to upgrade the whole grid to some extent to cope with, as you say, the data centers. But AI as well is a massive consumer of power. And if we're going to go down the AI route, then we're going to have to address the power situation with AI, because it's just huge, I believe. At least that's what I've read. So, yeah, I think you could be onto a couple of winners there, Jonathan. So, thank you so much for those. Now, I was going to ask you if there's any stocks that you feel are overvalued and that we should take money off the table. Any that stick out, you don't have to say any names, but if there is one that sticks out and you think, oh, just not sure about that, maybe I should be lightening the load. Is there anything that sticks out? If not, don't worry. Not that bothered.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think my comments on the prior sort of like larger, I think being wary on the larger cap materials and banking names, I think would be my broader comment, but nothing that I'd specifically like to mention today.
All right, well, that's good. Jonathan, it's been an absolute delight as always to chat to you. You've been a fantastic guest, a font of knowledge. And also, not only that, but you've made significant money for people that have followed your recommendations. So well done. Congratulations. It's been a great start to 2024, ABB. And of course, Zip has been zipping along, to say the least. So thank you for joining us here on the couch today. Really enjoyed our chat, and good luck for the rest of 2024.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Henry, and thanks for everyone for listening.